नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're beginning new chapter, chapter 11, canto 6. This chapter is entitled The Transcendental Qualities of Ritasura. And the first purport is in verse number 4. Sri Sukha Uvacha Tvamivam Shamsato Dharmam Vacha Pratyur Achetasaha Naiva Gananta Sambranta Palayana Paranirpa Sri Sukha Pritanam Asurim Asura Sabaha Kalanukulais Tridaisai Kalamanam Anantavat Trisvataptyata Sankruda Indrasatru Amarsitaha Tam Nirvar Yaujaso Rajan Nirbratsedam Uvachaha. Translation. O King Parikshit, the demigods, taking... Oh, I forgot to read the translation in the first one, didn't I? Okay, I'll go back and read the translation upon 1, 2, and 3. This is text 1. Sri Sukadagoswami said, O King, Vritrasura, the commander-in-chief of the demons, advised his lieutenants in the principles of religion. But the cowardly demoniac commanders, intent upon fleeing the battlefield, were so disturbed by fear that they could not accept his words. Texts 2 and 3. O King Parikshit, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attacked the army of the demons from the rear and began driving away the demoniac soldiers, scattering them here and there as if their army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of his soldiers, Ritasura, the best of the Asuras, who was called Indrashatru, the enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcibly rebuked the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. Text number 4. Kimva uchtarar matur dvavabir prastato hatai nahi bitai vadam slagyo na swargya suramani na. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers, exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind where they are running in fear? One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets. Purport. Vritrasura rebuked both the demigods and the demoniac soldiers because the demons were running in fear of their lives and the demigods were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science. Vritasura insulted the demoniac soldiers by comparing them to the stool of their mothers. both stool and a cowardly son come from the abdomen of the mother. And Vritrasura said that there is no difference between them. A similar comparison was given by Tulsidas, who commented that a son and urine both come from the same channel. In other words, semen and urine both come from the genitals, but semen produces a child, whereas urine produces nothing. Therefore, if a child is neither a hero nor a devotee, he is not a son, but urine. Haribol. Similarly, Chanaka Panda also says, Kurta putrena jantenam yona vidvam nadarmikaham kanena chakshusha kimvam chakshu pindaiva kevalam. Unquote. What is the use of a son who is neither glorious nor devoted to the Lord? Such a son is like a blind eye, which simply gives pain but cannot help one to see. End of purport. Om Agyantim. Demons are exhibiting their normal characteristics called cowardice. When things are reversed, the demons become fearful. And rather than stand and fight like heroes, which is the principle of Kshatriya encounters. It's explained in Bhagavad Gita, one of the qualities of a Kshatriya is heroism in battle. But here we see the opposite. The demons are running out of fear of their lives. And Vritrasura, he's a demon, he's not afraid. He's exhibiting the qualities of a Kshatriya and also the qualities of a devotee by accepting this service as fighting against the demigods in order to attain the position of back home, back to Godhead. So here in this particular section that we're reading, Vritrasura is angry, both at the demons and at the demigods. At the demons, because of cowardice in battle, and at the demigods, because of their not following the codes of proper, what we say, military conduct. He's simply killing the demons from behind, which is completely against all codes of Kshatriya conduct. One must follow principles according to higher authority in every aspect of life. One cannot act whimsically. One cannot act independently. One cannot act without purpose. There has to be a purpose or a reason or some meaning that will bring about some desirable result for one's action. So in all spheres of activity, there are codes of conduct and there are principles of action that allow for a particular result to manifest. Just like it is mentioned that one of the defects or one of the anarthas in executing devotional service is niyamagraha, or niyamagraha. That's following rules and regulations simply for the sake of following, with no desire to get the result. In other words, mechanical, not understanding the purpose of the rules and regulations, or seeing the rules and regulations as the end in themselves. Just like, this is quite common in certain religious circles, that if you just do what everybody else is doing, then that's good. It's more like a type of imitation that seems to be what is the program, but the imitation is not the activity, or the ritual is meant to be an expression of the devotion behind, not just the ritual or dry rituals. One time Prabhupada, was called by some very wealthy lady. He was visiting that area. I believe it was either Nellore or Indore. I'm not sure which one. One place. Prabhupada was there and doing some programs. And it was one very respectable lady, very religious. And she was going to install some deities in her home. And a very elaborate arrangement she made. So many Brahmin pundits came with shastra and chanting mantras. She had gorgeously decorated the whole area with so much paraphernalia. And it was just a grand show. And Prabhupada, when he came, he could understand what was going on, that she was just trying to impress others. Not so much the essence, but the external was the emphasis. So Prabhupada wasn't so much impressed by this. So she asked him if he could do the installation, bathe the deities. And so Prabhupada agreed, sat down, and said, "Give me a conch with some milk." And then he chanted the Govindam prayers, and while he was chanting the Govindam prayers, he poured some milk over the deity. And for a few minutes, he did that, and put the conch shell down, and said, "Deity is installed," and walked away. And the lady was shocked. She was expecting some grand, grand program of bathing and chanting and mantras and so many things. But Prabhupada just did something really simple and left, not wanting to become part of her show and some external thing. So there's practicing for the sake of practicing without really trying to achieve the goal. And that's quite common in religious circles. Sometimes you ask people, "Why do you do what you do?" "Well, because my grandfather did it. And his grandfather did it. And his grandfather did it. And his grandfather." You know, the story of Sargo Singh. You know that story? Nice story. Prabhupada tells. It's called The Story of Following Blindly. There once was a man, and someone very close to him died. So he put on black immediately, which is the culture. To put on black is a form of mourning the death of someone close. So he's walking along the street, a very simple, humble man, and some police officer comes up to him and says, "Why are you dressed in black?" He said, "Don't you know? Sargo Singh died." Oh, the police officer said, "Really? Sargo Singh? Oh, that's terrible. Oh, Sargo Singh. Oh." So he puts on black. Police officer. So he's there. And then he meets the police chief. Police chief said, what are you doing? Why are you dressed in black? He said, "Don't you know? Didn't you hear? Sargo Singh died." "Oh, really? Oh, that's terrible. Oh, Sargo. Oh, wow." Puts on black. So the police chief, he's dressed in black too. So he's walking around, and the mayor of the city sees him and says, "What's this? What are you doing?" He says, "Didn't you hear, Mayor? Sargo Singh died." "Really? Oh, that's terrible." Puts on black too. The mayor's walking around. So this continues. And then finally, the mayor meets the governor. Governor says, "What's this? What's the reason?" "Governor, don't you know Sargo Singh died?" "Oh, Sargo Singh. Well, who's Sargo Singh?" "You know, that's a good question. Let me go ask the police chief." So he goes back to the police chief. "Who's Sargo Singh?" I don't know. I'll find out. It goes back to the police officer. Can you tell me who Sargo Sink is? You know, it seems like it's important to know, you know. He says, you know, I don't know, but I know the person who does know. So he goes and finds this man. He says, you know, can you tell us who's Sargo Sink, you know? He said, yes, it was my donkey. He died. He's very dear to me. So Prabhupada tells this story, blind following. Just following blindly, right? Following the principles of anything without the purpose to achieve the principles. Or there's another aspect to the same feature, is that not following the principles and acting independently or whimsically, which we have here. They're not following the principles of Kshatriya code, and they're simply acting both or acting wrong. The demons should have been fighting, despite the fact that they were, what we say, overwhelmed. As Kshatriyas, that was their code. Even if they die, it says here, their death would have been glorious. But what is the use of carrying on a life as a coward, especially if one is a Kshatriya? Krishna told that to Arjuna, that, you know, if you don't fight, people will criticize you. And you will be known as one who ran from the battlefield, fled. And to hear that, for you to hear that, will be worse than death. You cannot live such an inglorious life. Better to die on the battlefield and achieve the higher, in this case, the heavenly realms, than to live a cowardly life. Just like, I remember, was it? I can remember. It was 9/11 in America, when those Twin Tower buildings were crashed by two big airliner jets. And after that, you know, there was a whole fear that ran through America. I mean, really, that this was going to happen regularly and without any notice. And everyone, especially airport personnel and securities, everyone was really very fearful and very careful. So I was in Chicago at the time. And I was with Bhakti Charu Maharaj. He was there. He got stuck he couldn't fly out of Chicago because of that situation. So finally he was trying to get out. And he couldn't get a flight. So finally about 4 or 5 days later, because all the flights practically were canceled, all over across the country practically. And finally he got a flight. And I said to Maharaj, you know, be careful traveling, you know. It's a little dangerous to travel at this time. He looked at me and said, you know, a coward dies a million deaths, but a hero only dies once. Powerful statement, he said. Said it with such, you know, conviction. That a coward dies a thousand deaths, a hero dies only once. And then right after that, I made my ticket to fly too. So. After I heard that, I decided I should continue on with my service. So, you see, you know, devotees, they have no fear because they know that Krishna is there. Krishna is there. So Krishna told that to Arjuna. You'll never be able to live. So therefore, using such powerful statements, such as Ritrasura is calling them stool from your mother. What is the use of your birth if you cannot fulfill your, I always say, duty as a Kshatriya to fight. And then he's also criticizing the demigods for acting inglorious and inappropriately. Because if someone runs from the battlefield, if someone acts in a cowardly way, still a hero doesn't take advantage of that and act against the military codes. Because the point is that a Kshatriya has to either fight and die or fight and win. There's no question of retreating. There's no question of retreating from... But nowadays, where do you find Kshatriyas? Just like in these today's wars, right? They draft some innocent people and they send them to the front lines. And all the big personalities who create the wars, they sit thousands of miles away in some computer room making decisions. Right? Making decisions. Kshatriyas years ago, real Kshatriyas would lead the fight, even if the odds were overwhelming. Nowadays, military leaders, you know, they sit in big rooms and just use computers to calculate strategies. And all the other soldiers go out and fight and die. There's a few leaders out there, but it's never the top people. The top people never fight. They get everyone else to fight. So this is not Kshatriya, this is Sudra, actually, or worse than Sudra. So Vritrasura, he's angry at both. And he compares, Srila Prabhupada compares that a son is either urine or a good son. If a son or a living entity takes the devotional service, then their life is perfect. They actually become glorious. Or if they become a hero. But if they take up neither, then what is the value? So most of the world is like that. Most of the world lives for sense gratification. Sense gratification is the goal of life in today's society. Everything is mixed with sense gratification. All aspects of life are focused on some kind of sense gratification, even religious life. When people are promised or worship God in order to get some future promises of happiness materially, or some idea that I can become powerful, I can become God, I can become influential. In other words, religious life is performed with some material gain. So that is not devotional service. Devotional service is hoituki apriyata eyatma supersedati, unmotivated, uninterrupted. And it can only satisfy the self when it's performed in that way. So therefore, one must take up devotional service free from, what we say, personal motivations. And what are the motivations that one can, material attachments, relegate one to trying to gain something through the process of devotional service? But the only gain, really, is devotional service is itself its own gain. When one engages in devotional service, that is the gain. What is the gain? To have devotional service. Because devotional service is the only thing that can purify the heart, can bring one eternal happiness, knowledge, and freedom from the cycle of birth and death. So here, we see what is inauspicious and what is auspicious, what is glorious, what is inglorious, what should be accepted, and what should be rejected. Vritrasura, what is his characteristic? He's a demon, but he has all the good qualities. In fact, he has better qualities than the demigods. He's a devotee, actually, but he's in the body of a demon. He's doing his service to fight against the demigods, who are actually devotees of the Lord, just like he is. He's accepted that difficult position of fighting against devotees. But this is his service, and he accepts it. And he's the best of both, actually. He's the best demon, he's the best devotee. He's teaching the demons how to be demons. He's teaching devotees how to be devotees. From two sides, he's acting. Krishna is empowering him to act in both ways. So, this point of following or executing one's service with a purpose is very important. Nothing should be done, what we say, for sense gratification. Nothing should be done without any understanding. Just like sometimes we ask, you know, why do you take up devotional service? Or why do you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? And sometimes we get different reasons why we do what we do. But ultimately, the goal is to please Krishna. That is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, second chapter, I believe verse number 13, that all activities must be done as a service to the Lord with a desire to please the Lord. Otherwise, it's mentioned in a previous verse that activities that are done without this motivation either have very little gain or no gain at all. In other words, they're useless, or they can only gradually raise one from a position of sinful activity to a position of pious activity. Otherwise, they have what we say, no real purpose. So devotional service or any activity must be with the ultimate goal in mind. Okay. I wasn't prepared for class today. I just found out today, a few minutes ago, that I was supposed to give class. So I'll stop here and see if there's any questions. Any questions, comments? Yes. Do we have a microphone?
Krishna.
Haribol.
In this purport, Prabhupada writes, a son would be a hero or devotee. Huh? So exactly in this, like, Kali Yuga, what is hero? Like,
what? A hero?
Yeah.
A hero. What is a hero? One who is glorious in their activities, right? We can use that as a definition. What does the dictionary say? Who knows? What is the dictionary definition of hero? Anybody know? Yes. Yes. Chaitanya Charanam? Huh?
Hare Krishna. A hero is one whom others admire and want to emulate, want to follow.
One who... One who's is admired by others and want to follow, that is a hero. But that does that mean in all categories? If somebody's a fool and he's admired by others, he's a hero?
This is like a generic definition.
Huh?
This is like a generic definition.
General definition, but specifically. In other words, one who is, what we say, outstanding and in an activity that is considered to be glorious, I would say. Like here, as it mentions in the previous chapter, the last verse, it says, there are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. One is to die after performing mystic yoga, especially bhakti. by which one can control the mind and living force and die absorbed in the thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second is to die on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. These two kinds of death are recommended in the Shastras as glorious. So a hero, or one who fights according to religious principles and dies, and one who is, takes up devotional service. So the scriptures give credit both to both. So we might say, does that mean any fight? Or just a fight that is what we say dharma yudya, a fight that is based on religious principle? What would you say? Is that any fight or just dharma yudya? Who can answer that question? Govinda, you can answer that question. Govinda Prabhu. Is a hero just a fighter in any battle, or is he a fighter just on religious principles? According to scripture's definition.
Even Duryodhan went to heavenly planets. He was not fighting a religious battle. The Pandavas were fighting a religious battle.
Uh-huh.
But still he went to the heavens.
Duryodhana.
So you explain, Maharaj.
You just gave the answer, right? But the explanation would be he was involved in a fight where Krishna was there. Krishna was on the battlefield. So to die in the presence of the Supreme Lord, or to die in the battle...
Then there is a greater promotion. Then you go to the spiritual world.
Huh?
Then you go to the spiritual world. We are only... You said only heavens.
He got only heaven.
Yes.
So that doesn't count? In other words, Krishna's presence doesn't give him any credit at all?
No, like one group it is fighting for the dharma. And another group is not practicing dharma. But because they are on the battlefield and fighting the war,
yeah,
they go to the heavens.
Yeah, but still, not only Duryodhana, but all the other soldiers too, because they died in the presence of Krishna. Yeah. So wherever Krishna is, it's auspicious. You get killed, they says, if you get killed by Krishna or in the presence of Krishna, such as that battle, there's a statement regarding that, then one is elevated. One is elevated. So today's wars, Iraq. If they fight and die fearlessly, is that they're seen as a hero, right? Yes. But is that the Shastra definition? Does that apply according to Shastra's principles? Or is that a new category of heroes? All these Brahmins over there, nobody's saying anything. All these pundits. Some pundit, somebody. Gaur Gopal Prabhu, you can answer this question. Huh? Okay. You take the Fifth Amendment, huh? He passes. Okay. Actually, even from a mundane point of view, we see that a person who fights for a cause and dies gloriously is considered to be a hero. A hero. Well, it's just the quality of self-sacrifice that is glorious. Okay, any other questions? There's another question somewhere, yes.
Here you're explaining Vritrasura was asking the demons not to flee and fight.
Yeah.
Prahlad Maharaj was like to his demoniac classmates and others, he was preaching them to become Krishna conscious.
Yes.
And I mean, like, Vritrasura was a Mahabhagavat in sense, like, so I just wanted to
know. I don't know if he was Mahabhagavat, but he was a pure devotee. So there's a difference.
So what I was asking is, like, why was he not trying to preach them to...
Why was he trying to preach to the demons or the demigods?
To both.
To both?
Of course, he was preaching to the demigods. I just wanted to know why he was not
Because a devotee lives by religious principles. And when he sees religious principles being thwarted or broken or dismissed, he becomes concerned. He wants to change. He wants to make a difference. A pure devotee, when he sees something not properly following, he makes some effort to correct it. So in this case, it was a big thing. Both for both sides, the demons were just, you know, they came to fight, and they exhibited their prowess. But when they saw their prowess had no effects, he just turned around and ran. You know, Krishna explains it, and here's explained again. To live as a coward is worse than death. One who is known as a hero. Some of these demons were great heroes previously. He calls out their names. Specifically calls out certain demons' names who were outstanding heroes in the battle. They had fought valiantly previously and defeated enemies. So now they're running. So, and the demigods, they're acting wrongly too, because what is the value of killing the enemy when they flee? Because for a kshatriya, he must fight fairly. So they're acting cowardly too. Both are acting wrong. So he's criticizing both. He's concerned that religious principles are followed. One cannot dispense with religious principles whimsically and expect to get the result. Mm-hmm. Any result. He's concerned. He's a pure devotee. He's not a Mahabhagavat. That's different. He's a pure devotee. Any other questions? There was a question somewhere I saw. You had a question? No? Okay. You changed your mind, huh? Changed his mind. Yes, Prabhu.
Raj, Prabhupada would often quote Chanakya Pandit. And he would say that if you get gold from a dustbin, also you should accept.
Yes.
If you get a girl from who's having good qualities, even from a very low family, one can accept. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we also see that Srila Prabhupada said that, and similarly he said for knowledge, you know, he said that, no, we should not discriminate. If we're getting knowledge, we should accept, you know, whoever it is. But then on the other hand, it is also said that one should not listen to Srimad Bhagavatam from a professional reciter. So, because we'll get contaminated and things like that. So, how do we resolve this conflict? On one hand, it is said that one can accept knowledge from anyone. And on the other hand, it is said that you should not listen from a professional Bhagavad reciter.
Prabhupada writes that in a few places. In one purport in Bhagavad Gita, he mentions that one should not hear from persons who are not qualified to speak on, you know, transcendental principles. Not religious principles, but transcendental subject matters. There's a difference. Speaking on religious principles and speaking on transcendental subject matters is different. So I think when it comes to this particular point, what knowledge is Chanakapanda referring to? Srimad Bhagavad Gita is giving transcendental knowledge, a pure knowledge. And when it's mixed with one's personal motivations or intended motivations, I mean, you know, Lord Chaitanya told Devananda Pandit, you know, he was expert at speaking Srimad Bhagavatam, but Lord Chaitanya became angry with him, said his Bhagavatam, his speaking of Bhagavatam is useless. He doesn't know the meaning of Bhagavatam. He's speaking for in order to further his reputation as a great orator. Milk touched by the lips of a serpent should not be, you know, accepted as milk. So the same principle, Bhagavad Saptaha. But then again, you know, there's another story where one thief was listening to Bhagavad Saptaha, and he became so absorbed in hearing it. At one point during the story, he heard about Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. In the description of the 10th canto of Krishna, the narrator was describing the opulences of Krishna's attire. He's dressed in so many ornaments and earrings and gold. So the thief was becoming really excited, saying, I have to meet this boy and steal all his jewelry. And he was hearing about Krishna. So he made a point to go to Vrindavan to find Krishna. As a thief, not to see Krishna in a devotional way, but to steal from Krishna. And somehow or other, he found Krishna due to his intense desire. And he saw Krishna, he was overwhelmed but with affection, and he just very nicely asked, can I have your jewelry? Krishna said, well, my mother will get very mad at me, so I can't give it to you. She'll become angry if I give my jewelry away. But when he's after speaking to Krishna and associating with Krishna, he became purified. So there's an example of hearing Bhagavad Saptaha and getting the wrong intention, but somehow or other getting a good result from that. So what is Chanakya Pandit saying? One should can receive knowledge from an obscure person, that's the word he uses. One can receive knowledge from an obscure place, obscure person. Just like if you're on the street and you're distributing books and, you know, some person on the street comes up to you and says, you're distributing these books, that's nice, but are you reading them? And you might think, you know, he's right. I'm not reading them. So there's an example of getting some kind of knowledge that is beneficial from a very obscure situation. What is the authority of that person? Nothing, but still, Krishna is speaking through them. So I think when, you know, I need to be, you know, qualified on this, but I think the knowledge that Chanakya Pandit is saying is general knowledge, not transcendental knowledge that is spoken in the form of scripture, such as, because there's different categories of knowledge. There's different categories of knowledge. And transcendental knowledge takes root in the heart when spoken by those who are qualified. Prabhupada talks about that in chapter 7, verse number 1. One should not hear from some academic person with academic knowledge who is just, he calls him upstart. There's no benefit to hear from such persons. question. Maharaj, you said you said one who fights with purpose and dies is called hero. I didn't say that, the book did. What about the one who won the fight? What will he be called? He's a hero if he wins. That's the nature of Kshatriya codes, that if you fight and die, and you're considered to be, you know, not hero, but one who is following religious principles. One who fights and dies on the battlefield, he's glorious. And he will gain the heavenly planets. But one who wins is the hero. So it says here, there are two glorious deaths. The second is on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. Not only fighting, but leading the army and never showing one's back. That is a glorious death. So I qualify that. It's not that one is a hero if he loses. He's glorious in the sense that he has fulfilled his varna. He's fulfilled his purpose. He gets the mercy of, you know, but what do they get? They get heavenly planets. We're not so interested in going to heavenly planets anyway. Why would we want to go to heavenly planets? Devotees see heavenly planets as, what is it? Akash pushpayate. It's like pie in the sky. It's like sky flowers or horse's eggs or something like that. The glories of achieving the heavenly planet are phantasmagoria for someone who has received the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, one who has received the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thinks that liberation and elevation to the heavenly planets are both worse than death. It's like, not the worst than death, but not. They feel like it's a loss. I've lost if I. Why would you want to go to the heavens? The denizens in heaven, those who are actually, what we say, realized. They want to come to this earth so they can take part in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Because it's an easier, route back to the spiritual world. So we're talking about varna here, vashram, vanashram. Not about devotional service. Okay, thank you very much for tolerating this class. Srila Prabhupada ki? Anything that I said correct goes to Nityananda Prabhu, and everything I said wrong goes to Nityananda Prabhu. He gets the credit and the other side too.